This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Blessed trails.
Welcome to Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, gospel and patriotic music, as well as songs that just lift your heart, most all of them with a definite Western flair. Today's guest is as big-hearted and down-to-earth as you can get, and at the same time, bigger than life and highly entertaining. But before we talk with him, let's listen to a song that could almost be his theme song, The Place Where I Worship.
Oh, the place where I worship is the wide open spaces built by the hands of the Lord, where the trees of the forest are like pipes of an organ, and the breeze plays an amen chord. Oh, the stars are the candles, and they light up the mountains. Mountains are altars of God. Oh, the place where I worship is the wide open spaces built by the hands of the Lord.
There's a carpet of green and the sky blue roof above.
And I'm welcome there alone with the ones I love. In your heart, take a good look. If you follow the good book, you're sure to find your reward. Oh, the place where I worship is the wide open spaces built by the hands of the Lord.
carpet of green and the sky blue roof above.
And I'm welcome there alone with ones I love. In your heart, take a good look. If you follow the good book, you're sure to find your reward. Oh, the place where I worship is the wide open spaces built by the hands of the
The first time I met this cowboy was actually backstage, more years ago than I care to admit. And he was getting ready to go out and tell his stories and do his poetry. He was polite and down to earth and witty, cowboy to the core. And I was delighted not only with him, but with his performance as well. What I didn't know at the time is that I was meeting one of the top chuck wagon cooks in the nation. With his passion and gift for cooking, Dutch oven or otherwise, his skills have been honed beneath the fly and of his and out of the pantry and the boot and off the work table of his vintage Studebaker chuck wagon. With a few breaks in his way by our good Lord, his gift for cooking, along with his straight up delightful and purely cowboy personality, he has been propelled to national mainstream recognition and arguably, and he will hate it that I'm saying this, is cooking stardom. Although he has made repeated appearances on the Cooking Channel, released a highly successful new cookbook, and recently appeared on the CBS Morning Show, true to his cowboy sensibilities, this extraordinary man remains unaffected by all this attention. He simply does what he loves to do. He teaches anyone who wants to learn how to do it, and he keeps a cherished way of life alive. I'm so looking forward to this, and I'm tickled to welcome to the show, from way out in the middle of a 173,000-acre ranch in southwest Texas, where he's been cooking for a bunch of cowboys, please welcome Kent Rollins. Hey, Kent.
Oh, honey, thank you so much, darling, for taking the time to have us on. And you said a lot of big words about me that I ain't for sure I even know what they mean, know me? But It's been a pleasure. Me and you have been like family for a long time, darling. Like I say, we won't say how many years because I'm just 29 and I think you're 28. So we'll leave
exactly.
It at that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, we do want to preface this with you are out literally out in the middle of a huge west ranch in southwest Texas. And you have to climb up to the top of a hill to get a good signal to call us. And so if we lose you, we'll just wait for you to call us back and we'll fill in. So just, this is live.
Sometimes Ma Bell ain't too appreciative out here where we're at. You know, I've always told people the cowboy sure is still alive. You can't see him going down the interstate 90 miles an hour. And we've been in places that are so remote, they don't show up on GPS. They sure don't have a map. So as long as there's a cow, there'll always be a cowboy. And as long as there's a cowboy on a working ranch, there'll always be a cook.
Yes, well, you're one of the best for sure. Well, I would like to just lay some groundwork and talk a little bit about where you grew up and what your childhood was like. So you want to kind of fill us in a little bit on that?
Yeah, I was born on the banks of the Red River down there, southwestern corner of Oklahoma, a little place called Hollis, a farm and ranch rural community and salt of the earth people that had the greatest values in the world, and they instilled them in me from the time I was little till they was gone. And come from a very loving family, and I was the youngest of four kids. And so I got to spend a little more time with Mama than the rest of them did and learned to cook from her around the age of 7 or 8 years old. I can remember standing on a stool and making a chocolate cake one day and thinking it was the greatest thing ever, but I didn't know I was going to have to wash the dishes later. But my mother taught me to cook, Belinda. She always said, cook what you love and love what you cook. And I've always done that. And it was a very important part of our life growing up that we never had a lot, but we never went hungry. You know, she had set a table and it was very very well enforced in everyone in that community at the time, as it should be nowadays. You know, you need to bring a family together and gather around the table and say grace and then share the food. Because Mama told me it wasn't the legs that hold the table up. It was a family that around it. And I was blessed to be raised in such a household. And my dad taught me to cowboy and to live and to work. And my mother taught me to cook and to love. And they've all come in handy.
Oh, wow. I guess so. So now, did you all go to, I know a lot of ranch families, and they are not able to go to church just logistically and just time-wise. It's kind of tough sometimes to get away every Sunday for church. They just go when they can. How did that operate in your family?
Well, you know, my oldest sister and the other twins, Randy and Cindy had cerebral palsy when she was born and was in a wheelchair. Been in one all her life. She's 63 now. But my mother made forth the effort all the time she could to get us to church. And the church we went to, there was stairs there. And I can remember Mama getting people and us too to pull that wheelchair up them stairs to get it in there till it became such a deal that it was just really hard for Mama to get there. But she would sure make sure that we was there, you know. And but there was a lot of them Sundays. It's like a dear friend of mine and yours both, old Leon Autry, told me one time. He said, you know, some of the best sermons I ever heard the Lord speak to me was sitting in a saddle, and the saddle horn was a pulpit. So he's there. Wherever you gather, whether there's one or a thousand, he'll hear your words.
Yes, that's sure. That's for sure. Now, you, as you grew up, you actually were worked on a ranch for a while, not as a cook, but you cowboyed for a while.
Yeah, I grew up with old timers that were some of the best cowboys I ever knew in the world. They stood tall as giant oak trees to me. They were heroes. And I was fortunate enough to get to go along with them when I was 9, 10, 11, 12 years old and learn by their mannerisms. They were people of a few words a lot of times, but they spoke with their action. And that action was always do your best, always make a hand, don't get in the way, and be there when they call time to eat.
That last one being very important.
Yeah, and you know, we never worked on no big outfits. We just worked with the neighbors and everybody else, and it was something that me and my oldest brother, Randy, sort of took to heart, because Daddy was a good cowboy, and we sort of liked that. Now, my middle brother, Dale, he's got a doctor's degree, and me and Randy would be down there horseback sometime when it's snowing cold, icicles hanging off our ears. He'd say, you know, Dale ain't here. He's pretty lazy. And I said, yeah, he's home looking at a book. Well, after Dale got out of college and was getting his doctor's degree and me and Randy was still down there riding around in the snow feeding cattle, I told him, I said, you remember when we used to think Dale was lazy? I said, Dale was just smart and we were stupid. That's all there was to it. But now I come from a great family, and, you know, there's a lot of them old men and my mother both instilled me a long time ago. You know, you have two things in life that the Lord has given you, and that's your family and your word. And be careful not to tarnish either one.
Oh, wow. That's incredible advice. Actually, it really is. So now as you're growing up, Kent, and you're going to church, and I'm always curious to talk to people about when their relationship with the Lord switched from being just you go to church and he's out there somewhere and you know he's watching you kind of a thing, and to actually bringing him inside of you and understanding that you can have a personal relationship and you can talk to him just like you're talking to a precious family member. And at what point in your life did that happen with you?
Well, I can't give you the exact day, darling. But when you gather around the table in all your life, somebody said grace and give thanks to the Lord for what you have. It's pretty easy to talk to him when you're raised in that environment. And we didn't get to church every Sunday, but I can remember when I was up old, maybe just starting junior high, and I was a shy little feller, didn't do a lot of stuff, played a few sports, but I can remember thinking that I needed somebody, and I didn't really know who it was at the time, but I needed somebody to watch out for me because I was the littlest person in the seventh grade. And people got to tell me, you're too little to play sports, you're too little to do this, you're too little to do that. And I can remember one Sunday at church, God told me, you're not too little to do anything. With me in your heart, you're as big as any man in the world.
And, wow.
From about that point on, I got thinking, hey, I may not be big in size, but he told me I'm big in heart. And that's sort of when it all took a hold, you know. And
wow.
It's a great thing to be able to know, you know, we have a God out there who has done it all, seen it all, and will be there for you. And he won't put more in your saddle than you can tote if you'll just lean on him.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Oh, my gosh. Well, we're going to do a song here in just a second. And I believe that you were friends with Larry McCorder, were you not?
Me and Larry were great friends. We did a lot of entertaining together and a lot of visiting. And got the privilege of being able to be around his dad, son, who was a great cowboy, and Larry was too. But mm-hmm. Truly, truly good person, and he is missed by so many.
He is. And so I thought it would be fun to do, actually, Gene Prescott singing one of Larry's, my favorite songs that Larry wrote. It's called I'll Meet You at the Throne. So we're going to listen to one of Larry McCorder's songs right now.
Dear friend, we've been through many miles and years. We know each other so well. There's stories between us that bring smiles and tears, and secrets that we'll never tell. But the one who has known us before we were born and gave us each other as friends, we'll call one to heaven and leave one forlorn, but that's not where fellowship ends. I'll meet you at the throne, where our crowns we'll lay at his feet. Let us never forget there's a rendezvous set where once again we'll meet, where we'll sing holy, holy, and worthy is he who has called unto himself his own. Be it first you or me, let us here now agree. I'll meet you at the throne. If I go before you, please don't be despaired. It's where we long to be. The mansion is finished, our Lord has prepared, and there it waits for me. All the angelic beings and saints gone before will shout when those gates I walk through. In heaven there's plenty of room for one more, for your place is waiting there too. I'll meet you at the throne, where our crowns we'll lay at his feet. Let us never forget there's a rendezvous set where once again we'll meet. There we'll sing holy, holy, and worthy is he who has called unto himself his own. Be it first you or me, let us here now agree. I'll meet you at the throne. Be it first you or me, let us here now agree. I'll meet you at the throne.
That's a wonderful promise, isn't it?
Yes, it is, ma'am. And a great song by Larry, and a good job by Gene.
Yes, two very special people, for sure. Good friends of both of ours.
Yes.
We have a lot of precious friends in this genre, don't we? We have amazing people,
ma'am,
that are attracted to Western music and cowboy poetry. It's pretty cool. So, yeah. Kent, I am so curious how you ended up, you know, what happened in your life to bring you to the point of actually getting a chuck wagon and starting your catering business and, I mean, going going in that direction with your life. How did that happen?
Well, I started guiding some elk hunters with my mother's brother. He lived out north of Silver City in the Gila Wilderness. It's about 825,000 acres. And we went in a little further than anybody did. We'd go to the middle of the wilderness from any side. It was about 26 miles in. And I noticed we was packing some Dutch ovens that first day I took off. And I've cooked in cast iron at that time, but I'd never done no bacon. And we get up there, and he throws that stuff out there on the ground. He said, "I know your mother taught you to cook, and she's the best cook in the world, so you can be the cook." And when you're 26 miles up there and you didn't really know you was going to be the cook when you got there, you get to thinking that, hey, I hope these fellas don't mind eating what I'm cooking, because they sure ain't going nowhere else to eat. And they ate a few burnt biscuits that first morning. But after that, I sort of figured stuff out what was going on. It got a little better from there. But was in there about 5 weeks, I guess. And coming out of there, I remembered some of the old wagon cooks that I'd met and some of the folks that I'd seen that cooked off wagons. And they, you know, an old cook was supposed to be known as a grumpy old feller that couldn't cook, and he just got by with what he had. And sure, there were some of them that way, and there were some pretty good cooks. But I got to thinking, you know, I love to cook, and I love to cowboy. But one of these days, I think I'm going to trade fires. I'm going to go from the branding fire to the cooking fire. And it is 2 or 3 years after that, maybe a little longer, that a fella I knew told me he had a wagon for sale. And I went and looked at it and bought it. And I thought, you know, I'm going to cook a little, and I'm going to go to cooking for ranches. So some of the ranches that I knew people own, I'd call and say, hey, when you have spring or fall works, you need a cook, holler. And I remember taking my first job, and the cook always made twice what the cowboys did. That was just standard. And the first one, I was making $50 a day. Cowboys making $25. Mm. But when you're in there 3 weeks and you get paid at the end, you think you won the lottery, because you sure ain't went nowhere to spend it. But it was all about what's in your heart more than it was what's in your wallet. And that's what was always taught to me as a child. And you can have more friends than you'll ever have money, and you better know which one to value the most. So.
Yeah.
It wasn't long after that, word of mouth and a full stomach got out, and it went from one ranch to another ranch, and started cooking for a few parties, and then did a TV appearance, I guess, in 96 with Home and Family with Christina Ferrari out there at L.A., and that sort of busted the door open a little there for some of the TV stuff, and next thing you know, it was corporate gatherings and bar mitzvahs and everything in the world, and rocked along there for 10 or 12 years and just had a good time. Cooked a lot, traveled a lot of miles, still cooked for about 3 working ranches, and then didn't really quit cooking. I just sort of got by. I don't know if I got burned out or what happened, and there were some things happening in my life that I sure didn't expect to happen, and things sort of went a different direction, and I fell in love with a beautiful young lady after that, and she instilled in me, never give up on your dreams. And I put forth my passion back in there that I always had. And it's been the greatest reward ever. When you're married to your best friend, someone you work with 365 days a year, and you share the same love for it that each other has. And sure, mm-hmm. Shan didn't know nothing about cooking when she come along. I didn't know nothing about computers, but we've both come a long way since then.
That's for sure. Oh, I love that. Yeah, those computers can be confounding sometimes. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, and your wagon, it is a beautiful little wagon, and that's authentic. All the check box and everything that's all in the back, and all the little drawers and stuff. It was that. I think just being around that wagon when we were with you guys, it just, I mean, even though there's a lot of modern things around you, you just kind of feel transported. I do. Yeah, I just feel like I can totally picture it being out in the middle of nowhere. Of course you can, because you literally take it out there. But I mean, what does it feel like to have that as your tool to cook with every day?
Well, there's things I don't take for granted, and that's my sweet wife, Shannon, in that wagon. I mean, it's for 26 years, it's followed me around, and it's always done its job, never let me down. Sure, it requires sometimes 18, 19 hours a day, in some of the worst conditions that you can ever be in from Mother Nature. But the view out the kitchen window is always the best. And to know that, you know, I'm still reliving a part of history that them old cooks did ever since way back in the 1870s. You know, I still cook with the same methods they cook. Sure, I got a whole lot more to work with, but it's still the same procedure. The ranches are running the same operational way, most of them. The old ways of the old cowboys so many years ago got passed down in a code of ethics and honors. And it's a great thing to know that this lifestyle still is there. And the chuck wagon, you know, it's the first Meals on Wheels ever invented. So it's still here.
It is. And that brings us to your cooking school. And I had the pleasure and honor and absolute delight and thrill to be part of your cooking school this spring. And whose brainchild was that?
Well, that was mine. I'd started doing them a long time ago in 1998, 99, I guess, when I started. And I was doing them on location at different festivals and stuff, going and do 1 and 2 day clinics, you know, to teach people to cook in cast iron. And somebody told me, said, you ought to do one of these things at home. Just have people come to you, quit traveling. So it wasn't long after that, Food Network got a hold of it. And Al Roker did a special there, Roker on the Road, on cooking schools. And from after that point, there's been a waiting list ever since. You know, and it's me and Sam try to work 2 in a year. This time we're trying to get 4 in because there's so many people on the waiting list after CBS Sunday morning. But it's, as you know, we teach a whole lot about cooking, but we teach a whole lot more about life. You know, it's a simple way in a simple place. You learn to cook in cast iron, but you can bake anything in a Dutch oven. You can put in a conventional oven, and it's it just tastes better out there in under God's eye in Mother Nature's kitchen.
It does. And you know, really, you said you teach not only cooking, but you teach life. And I think that kind of permeates the cowboy culture, because when you're out there learning to cowboy and you're learning how to get along, it's not just the chore. It's not just the task at hand, but it's interpersonal relationships. It's about integrity. It's about all of those kinds of things that just are kind of folded in to the cowboy culture that are very subtle but profound. I mean, they are an intricate part of every aspect of cowboying. So I think I get really irritated when I hear cowboy when it's used in a derogatory term, like it's somebody who's like disrespectful, kind of a renegade kind of a person. And like, every time I hear it used in that context, I think that's not like any cowboy I was ever around or I ever grew up around.
I tell people the true cowboys, the ones that are real, are some of the nicest, politest people in the world. They're stewards of the land and the livestock that they have, but they know who to give credit for, and that's God. And it sort of rubs me the wrong way at times too. I just tell people, I say, you don't really know the real cowboy. You wouldn't even think that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Our job to set them straight, isn't it? Well,
at times.
one of your favorite cowboys was your dad.
Yeah.
And I read here recently that it was through your dad's illness that you actually started writing your poetry and doing your storytelling. And I would love to hear how that came about.
Well, you know, I never was the sharpest knife in the drawer, and them school teachers reminded me of that often. I made a D in speech class in high school because I didn't like to get in front of people. Mm-hmm. But when my dad was going through a long battle with cancer that was off and on for about 15 years, I needed somewhere to put it. I don't know, woke up in the middle of the night one night and just went in there and went to writing stuff down, and it just sort of, I think the good Lord was telling me, this is the way you deal with some of the pain. You know, you don't talk to people about it, but you write it down. And there's things that I've never shared with people that I wrote, but there's a lot of things that I thought, hey, this has got meaning. Maybe this, if I pass it on, can help somebody know that you can get through the times of trouble and strife, no matter what they are, you know. And it was a very hard lesson to learn when my dad passed away, because we were sort of hand in hand and side by side many a day in the saddle, and it was a blessing. And I really did, Belinda, I got mad at God when he took my father from me at 65 years old. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking him, why? Why could you do this? My mother needed him. I needed him. He was the best man in the world. And I remember the good Lord told me one day when I was fixing fence about a week after that, because I tried to work myself nearly to death just to stay busy, didn't dwell on my mind so bad, and hit the ground out there on my knees, which is where he'll put you when he gets ready to talk to you. And he said, there is a good thing that comes from this, and that is patience and understanding. It took me a little while, but I have the patience of Job now. And my dad was in a way, sort of turned opposite of that. He wasn't a patient man at times, but through his passing and the good Lord's word, I learned a very valuable lesson. You know, I think about him every day. I see things that me and him did. But when he passed away and left my mother to care for my oldest sister who's in a wheelchair, I knew my mother was the toughest of the pair. But it's something that you have to write down, you have to get out, and if it helps people get through a little time of trouble, well, hey, it's worth sharing.
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, and then your poetry evolved from very poignant in dealing with grief and dealing with those struggles. Then you started writing about more fun things.
Yeah, I would sit down at times and think, I've got this on my mind. It's really serious. And I'd start writing and it would go 180 degrees in another direction. It'd be funny. Or I'd write it down. I'd think, this is not a poem. This is a story. You know, mm-hmm. And because most of the stories that I heard them old timers say or the ones that happened to me, a story was always something that usually caused pain to someone, but you learned to laugh at it or you wouldn't make it.
Yeah. I believe in that. I believe laughter gets us through some pretty amazingly tough times.
It does that.
If you can find the joy, if you can find that silver lining, if you can find something positive to glom onto, then somehow it's still tough, but you feel like you're buoyed up a little bit. You can get through it now. And oh my gosh. Well, I love your storytelling, and this is a little bit different for the show, but I would love for you to tell us one of your stories right now.
Do you want a story or a poem, honey?
I want a story, and then I think you're going to give us a poem at the end. You said a poem about your dad that you're going to do at the end, right. But I would love one of your stories right now.
All right. Well, you know, we lived on a ranch, and you didn't go to town often. So when you did get to go to town, you were 7 years old. You made the most of every opportunity, and your cousin would come over and spend the night with us on the weekends at time, and he was six, and Mom would go to town in the car to get groceries. Dad would go to town to get feed. And, man, we went to running out that door that morning. My mother reached out there and grabbed me by the collar, and she said, where are you headed? I said, Mom, I'm going to town. It's Saturday. I'm going to watch a movie. And she said, no more Western movies for you. Do you hear me? She said, you remember what happened last month? And I said, no. And she said, yeah, you do. You burnt the neighbor's hay pile down, run his milk cow off, shot his goat with a bow and arrow. There won't be no more Westerns. And I said, all right, Mama, I'll pay attention. So we went to town, back to Daddy's pickup down up there, and we get up there at Hollis at Matinee Theater there, the La Vista. And sitting out in the street back in the 60s there, they did a little sawhorse billboard that would tell you what was playing, have a color picture. Well, that day that we went to town, my dad pulled up there and he said, well, here's what's showing, boys. Y'all gonna go and see it. Well, I remember asking my dad, what is it? And he said, Ben Hur. Well, I didn't know who Ben Hur was, and he was dressed pretty funny, but he was riding on something that I didn't know anything about, but I'd like to have one. So we went into the movie theater, me and a cousin, and we watched that. And to this day, it's still one of my most favorite movies ever made. Cecil B. DeMille done the best job with actors and the horses that I'd ever seen. Old Kirk Douglas done a great job, but the thing that caught our eye was a chariot. We couldn't wait for the movie to get over so we'd go home build one, and sure enough, we did. Got down there to the barn. Daddy unloaded the feed and left. Mama was still in town and left my oldest brother, Randy, there. And I told him, I said, we need to build a chariot. Can you help? And he said, yeah, I'll sure help you. So we got the red wagon, the little old radio flyer, pulled all the wheels off of it. My grandmother had some of them old antique tricycles, had them big wheels in the front. We got two of them, put one on the back on each side. I told Randy, I said, can you hook a catch rope to this, belly up to your saddle horn, pull me to the top of the hill, pitch the slack, will I coast to the bottom? He said, you'll fly. But you have to remember, an older brother will get a younger brother killed off at any opportunity in his life if he has a chance. So we commenced to make the wagon, and I told the cousin, you find something to throw at me while we're going on this wagon ride. I said, there's chunking spears and shooting bow and arrow and old Ben the whole time. Now, I'm glad we didn't have a spear nor a bow and arrow, but Mama done took them away from us. Well, we had a lot of rocks in our country, and I said, get some of them rocks and throw at me. But they're a big old flat chip rock, weigh about 40 pounds, and a kid of 7 or 6 years old can't pick them up. But a thing that is most plentiful in our country, in Oklahoma, on a hot August day, on them old day roads, is a thing called a sail rabbit or a sail possum. It's a rabbit or a possum that's been run over in the road about 170 times and then baked by the hot Oklahoma sun till he's like a frisbee with fur. So the cousin armed himself on both sides of that bar ditch with sail possums and sail rabbits, and I went to the barn to adorn my costume, took off my breeches, my boots, my shirt, got me 2 feed sacks and some baler twine, tied them around there, sort of looked like what old Ben was wearing. I remember walking out that door, and I'm thinking, you know, my mother told me, be safe as you play. Well, old Ben had a helmet he wore in that movie, and I'm thinking, man, if I just had a football helmet or something, it'd sure help. Well, we didn't have no football helmet back then. I tried on a feed bucket, and that wouldn't work. Got me a bunch of them old toe sacks, tried to make me some padded helmet. I couldn't get that to stay on. And I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do. And as I walked out the feed room door, I spied a helmet laying there on the ground. You see, we'd fed the chickens a watermelon about 2 weeks back, and they'd hold that thing out so slick and pretty, and I eyeballed it for size, and I reached down there and slapped it on my head. And one thing I can tell you for sure, you're going to wipe the slime out of them before you put them on there, because they sure get to jostling around. So I thought if I just had a chin strap to hold it on, everything would be good. So there wasn't nobody in the house, and I figured if anybody had one, it'd sure be Mama. So I went in there in her bedroom, got to prowling around in that big old dresser. I couldn't see. I was just going by feel and touch. And sure enough, here in a minute, I felt it. It was white and frilly, had padded earmuffs buckled under your chin. Slipped right over that watermelon. It didn't fit just right. Old Randy was about to fall off that big old blue horse he was riding from laughter when I got in that chair. He said, you're ready to go? And I said, let her rip. We went to the top of that hill in a big hurry, and he pitched the slack, and I mean, man, we was approaching down that hill, I thought, maybe 50 miles an hour, because I could feel the draft in the back. My toe sack skirt was sticking straight out. And out of the corner of my eye, I seen a sail rabbit coming at me. I ducked it, hit me right there in the watermelon helmet, and bounced off. I thought to myself, I've got this made. I dodged another one, and then another one, and then the cousin got ahead of me and got them sail possums, and he got low to the ground. Got to throwing them like you're skipping rocks off the water. They're so dry and hard, they're making sparks come off that dirt road as they headed for my chariot, and that's when it happened. You see an old possum that's been run over in the road 100-something times and baked by the hot Oklahoma sun, his old tail will get hard, hooked on one end, that old snout will be hard on the other. He went through the back wheels of my chariot, his snout lodged on one side of the wheel, his old hooked tail on the other. It's sort of like a set of brakes on a hydraulic truck. My chariot came to a sudden halt, and my helmet took the impact as I hit the ground out there. I will tell you right now, them helmets were never approved by OSHA as it busted there all around me, and my nose took the rest of that impact as I bounced down that hill. I want you to try to get this picture in your mind. 1962, there at the bottom of an old dirt road hill in August is about 111 degrees, lay a naked boy. And there was watermelon scattered all around him, and there was a brassiere around his neck. And there was a car coming. But worse than that, his mama's car. She pulled right up there beside me, rolled that window down, looked out there at me, and she said, been to the movies again, have you? I said, yes, ma'am, Mama, I have. She said, well, I hope you've learned something from this. I said, I have, Mama. I said, Sound of Music plays next month. Surely we can't get hurt by that one.
Oh, I can so see that, Kent.
It was a painful experience.
Yes, and your brother did not help, did he?
No, Randy, he got me in more stuff than I could get out of, and I'm glad he did it. It made me a tougher person, but sometimes I really really think about my sense, because I do stuff at times. I think, I know this is going to hurt when we get through. But like my dad said, you better laugh at life as you go through it, because everybody else is laughing at you.
Well, I tell you what, people are not laughing about all of the cooking shows and things that you've been able to accumulate here over the last, gosh, especially the last like 6 or 8 years, I think. My goodness, you've been on Chopped a couple of times. You've been on that food fight thing. And oh my goodness, it's just, I can't tell you how fun it is to watch TV and see someone that you know so well and love up there on television. And I think one of the funniest stories you related to me about your experience with this whole TV cooking thing was when Bobby Flay showed up where you were cooking to do chicken fried steaks. And I would love for you to tell a little bit about, and he was introduced to Bertha. We haven't talked about Bertha. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Bertha is a sweet lady in the wintertime. She's 385-pound cast, just old wrought iron stove. And she puts out a lot of love in the winter, but in the summer she will cook you, I promise, if she gets a chance. And we had the Food Network had called and said, hey, we'd like to do a special called Chuck Wagon Cuisine, and we'd like for it to be about you. And I said, hey, I'm on the ranch right now, but if y'all can come down here and shoot it while I'm here, that's fine. And they showed up. We filmed a couple of days, and everything was going along just about like I thought it ought to. And the next morning, they went to moving a bunch of stuff around, brought in some more camera guys, brought in some more sound guys. And I remember I telling Shan, I said, I don't know what's going on. I said, but something happened. And she said, I ain't got a clue. Well, they had somebody down there at the road that blocked people from coming up there where we was at just so they could keep it about half quiet. And I was talking about Chuck Wagon food and how good it was, and I looked up and I see this big old Dodge diesel pickup coming, and I'm thinking, well, this fella didn't pay attention to the sign down there at the road that says keep out. And here to me, he pulled right up there beside the wagon, but he's sort of on the opposite side that I was. And when he got out, I got to hearing people hollering and people going, oh my God, it's him. And I'm thinking, I wonder who it is. He walks around the corner, and I don't really know the man at that time. I sort of knew who he was. And he walks around the corner, and he said, howdy. He said, my name's Bobby Flay. And I said, how are you? He said, I hear you cook the best chicken fried steak in the world. I said, I don't know if I cook the best one, but I said, I bet I've had more practice than anybody else. And he said, I'd like to challenge you to a throwdown on chicken fried steak. And I looked at him and I grinned. I said, okay, buddy. I said, let's have us a good time. It was about 95 or 6 degrees that day before we built the fire. And I remember whispering over to Shan by the time we got ready to start. I said, we're finna find out how tough this New Yorker is. We're going to stoke old Bertha plumb full of wood and we'll see what happens. So we got her plumb stoked up there. She was blowing enough smoke, looked like she was pushing a freight train down the track. I remember Bobby coming up there and the sweat was running off of him. He was hot. And he looked at me and he said, man, have to be a fool to do what you do. I don't know why you do it. I said, nobody else wants to, Bobby. It's job security. He was a good sport. He did get beat, but he learned that Mother Nature sometimes is not always cracked up to be, especially when it's in last of August and you've got a big old fire going, But Bertha will welcome people at times in different ways.
Well, I tell you what, when you had your camp set up in Silver Dollar City, and I'd get there early every morning so that I could come hang out with you guys and have cowboy coffee and hang out around Bertha. She was a very welcome part of camp at that point. There was a lot of people gathered around Bertha keeping warm.
She's pretty nice in the winter. I've been on ranches in December where it'd be down 5 or 6 below some mornings, and she's a pretty welcome old gal. I really love her.
Yes, she is.
I've kicked her and beat on her and hollered at her a lot of times in July and August when she's burning the hair off my legs. But it all evens out in the long run.
It does. Well, I would like to talk now about you have a brand new cookbook out that I just
I just love it. I mean, I know technically it's a cookbook and it has fabulous recipes in it, but oh my goodness, Kent, it has stories in it. It has poetry in it. It has your lovely wife Shannon's amazing photography in it. I mean, it literally is something you'd be proud to put out on the coffee table. And can you tell us a little bit about your cookbook?
Well, it was a sort of a dream of mine and Shannon's a long time ago to have this. And after Chopped Grill Masters aired 4 or 5 years ago, whenever it was, the next Monday there was more people calling me than I could keep up with. And one of the ladies was Janice Dunnage. She's a book agent out of New York. She said, do you have a cookbook? And I said, I self-published one, ma'am. And she said, well, you need your own cookbook. And she said, you need to have a hard-bound cookbook, glossy pictures, great cookbook. And I said, well, ma'am, I couldn't afford one of them, I don't imagine. And she said, no, you ain't paying for it. And I really didn't know what was going on, but we trusted her, and Janice is truly good people. She got us to writing the proposal for it, which was a long process in its own. It's about 90 pages, and time we'd send it off, and they'd send it back to us, and it looked like somebody had been writing in first grade because the red ink marks was pretty thick on it about what was wrong or what went here or what should have went there. And when we finally got it figured out and got it picked up by Houghton Mifflin, who is a great company, Rux Martin is a sweet lady, and we got to do it our way. Everything in the book is ours. The stories are ours. The food is ours. The pictures are all ours, because that's the way we wanted it to be. We wanted it to be something that was from our heart. And I tell people it's a lifestyle book. It's not just a cookbook. It lets you take a glimpse into the cowboy way of life and see the great pictures that Shannon has took on so many beautiful ranches. And to go through the book and first read all the stories and look at the pictures, then pick you out something to cook. But it's something that we wanted to be able to feel when you pick it up, it'll feed your heart and your soul both.
Mm. Well, it certainly does that. And from what I can see following you on Facebook, you guys are staying pretty busy with book tours.
Yeah, they keep us pretty well wound up short, which is a good deal. We go to New York. I think we've been up there about 6 times now, and people ask, I really can't feature you in New York. And I've really come to love New York. It's a very historic place. There's 8 million people up there. We did a deal on Fox and Friends about a week ago, and I told them people, them hosts, I said, you know, there's 8 million people live on this island. And I said, where I'm at on this ranch right now is 173,000 acres, Nate, but 20 people live on it. And they can't grasp a hold of that. But it's a great deal. CBS Sunday Morning, Jay Kernis and all the people at CBS done such a great job on the piece that they did. And I remember coming down here that day. I didn't even get to finish watching all of it. I had to come to this ranch, and Shannon stayed at home the first week so she could sort of get caught up. And she called me late that evening after I got camp set up, and it had come a big blow that day and blowed the fly down already the first day and blowed teepees down, and just sort of one of them old depressing days. And got over in the teepee and was really surprised that I had a phone signal and seen I'd missed a call, and I called her and I said, how are you, sweetheart? And she said, you're not going to believe this. And I said, what's that? And she said, right now we are the number one book on Amazon. I said, that's good, number one in cookbooks. She said, no, you don't understand. We're number one in all books. Out of 8 million books, we're the number one book. And tears sort of run down my face. And she said, what, you okay? And I said, I wished I was there with you to hold you at this moment. But I said, you're where you need to be. And I said, I'm here where I got my start. And I said, that's cooking for cowboys. And it's a great thing to be able to have something like this. And we're not, you know, it's not a deal that I'm after for praise or honor or any of that. I want it to be something that people could see a lifestyle of. And we put our heart and soul in it. It was a 2.5-year process. And we think it's the greatest thing in the world.
Well, it is. I have to agree. And you touched on Shannon earlier. I mean, talk about a jewel. She is just an amazing woman and such a treasure in your life. And I tell you, being around the two of you, you just can't help but smile all the time because there's just such amazing love and respect and honor that passes between the two of you all the time. It's just, it's a beautiful thing, Kent.
Well, it's like my mother told me, you have someone you love or you have something you love to do. Don't take it for granted because it might not be there tomorrow. And we're not promised mm-hmm. that. And, I love that Shannon. She is the love of my life and she knows it. I'm not one to hide my feelings, and I think any true man that is true man shouldn't hide his feelings. You know, you got somebody mm-hmm. you love, you tell them. You know, it's a great mm-hmm. thing. But she's a hard-working little thing, and we've been in places. She was one of the first women to ever tip off a wagon on the Bale Ranch, which is 300,000 acres, and that ranch has been going a long time. They just didn't allow women in camp. And now when ranchers call me and I say, if my wife is not welcome there, I won't be there. I said, because she's like American Express. I don't go nowhere without her. it's a great thing that ranchers have changed some of the old ways, you know, that women are welcome, and it's more family-run deal. It really helps. But I remember out there at the Bell Ranch the first year was there, which was about 4 years ago, I guess, now this spring. And it was one of them old days when it was hot. The wind was blowing about 40 miles an hour. You couldn't see a long ways because of the dirt. And I looked over there at this little woman that I love, and a tear was running down her face. And I said, go get in the pickup, darling, or go to headquarters. I said, get out of this old wind. I said, it'll beat you to death. And she looked at me, and she smiled, and she said, this is what we do. And it made a tear come rolling down my face because she wasn't born into this. This is something that she acquired when she acquired me. And she's put her whole heart into it. And I don't know of a tougher one, but her smile is something that'll warm your heart from the first time you see it. And it's a great thing. Like I say, I'm married to my best friend, and oh, how I love her.
Well, I can't think of a better segue into this wonderful song by Jeff Gore, and I believe you know Jeff.
Yes.
He wrote this for his beautiful bride, and it's one of my favorite cowboy love songs. There's not one word mentioned in it about cowboys, but as Jeff said, I'm a cowboy, and I wrote it, so it's a cowboy love song, and it's called Now That I Found You.
I have seen a lot of things to give words to the songs I sing, but I had not seen anything till I saw you.
Now sometimes I can't believe what your eyes could see in me, but it's made up. Now that I found you,
every day it's plain to see how alone I used to be. Now I found the best of me. Now that I found you. Columbus found the world anew. Roses find the morning dew. Now I know that dreams come true. Now that I found you.
Every day the world is new. Love just finds a chosen few. Now I know. Now that I found you.
just as long as you choose to stay. And every day's a better day now that I found you. Every day it's plain to see how alone I used to be.
Now I found the best of me, now that I found you.
Now I found the best of me, now that I found you.
Well, I know Jeff wrote that for his wife, but it sure sounds like it fits you and Shannon.
Yeah, it's a little mismatch there, but sometimes opposites sure attract and they fit well. She's a great writer, a great cook now, because she used to never cook. She didn't even know how to cook in a microwave, she tells me. But like I said, great writer, great photographer, and just a great person. I encourage people, go to Amazon and order the book, or go to any bookstore. It's all across the United States and Canada. And we'd be honored for you to have it. And if you get it and you want a signed book plate, they can just get a hold of it. We'll sure send them one.
That would be awesome. It's a wonderful book. And I'm so delighted that you took the time. I know it's difficult because you're out on the ranch cooking and you have to kind of squeeze us in between the meals. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show, Kent. What's coming in your future? What's on the horizon for you guys?
Well, you never know. Somebody asked me, what are y'all going to do tomorrow? And I said, I ain't got a clue what's coming along tomorrow, but with her by my side, it'll be the best day ever.
Yep.
And that's how I've always looked at it. And there's a lot of things in the works. Some of them we can't talk about just yet, but hey, we're just out to have a good time. And if we can share something through food and thought and picture, it's even better than that.
That's true. Well, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, the best place to do that would be where?
Just go to KentRollins.com. It's just ROLLINS.com. Or they can find us on Twitter, or they can find us on Facebook or Instagram. Shannon's got me set up to date on all this stuff. I don't even know what it is, but I use it every day. So,
but you're on there. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, you're ahead of me. I'm not on all that stuff. I'm still trying to get it figured out. I need a lesson from Shannon.
Well, the cookbook people said you have to be so social media minded. And I said, social media to me, ma'am, was when two people got together and they had a cup of coffee and visited.
Yeah.
But I've come a long way since then. But they can just go to, as I used to tell people, just go to the Google. It's on there somewhere.
Yeah, it is. And not only for the cookbook, but I mean, you are definitely still taking your chuck wagon and catering. And I tell you what, the best steak I ever had was back in Pigeon Forge, and you served a couple hundred people. Amazing.
Yeah, we are so honored now to have certified Angus beef and National Beef as sponsors. So you start with the best product, you got to end up with something better than that, And I've grilled a lot of steak in the last 25 years, and we put our seasoning on it, and we do sell a lot of it too. It makes for some good eating.
Well, it's my staple in my kitchen, so I would recommend your seasonings as well. Just so many cool things, and again, thank you for being on the show. And we're going to go ahead and close out your part of the show with a poem that you're going to do for us. I think you said about your dad.
Yeah. Now, this is something that will apply to everybody in life, whether a cowboy, a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, or a housewife. He is covered all with sweat as I tied my old horse there in the shade. He said, an old horse that'll stand for more than 5 minutes. Oh, he said, I don't think there's ever been one made. He wore an old ragged pair of leggings that had been cut off just below the knees. His old hands were hard, calloused. His arms were like two giant limbs that hung off a big old oak tree. He said, "You reckon you could hold this old feller? He seems to have a lot of trouble standing still." "Why, you'd think after 45 years of this, I'd quit. Had enough and got my fill." We let that old horse's leg down, and he went to his anvil to shape a shoe. He said, "Sometimes in life, we've all got to have a little adjusting to keep us straight, to keep us true." He said, "Trimming and shoeing these old horses," he said, "it's just like dealing with life. Nobody said it was going to be easy, but if you'll do it with pride and honesty, you can get through the times of trouble, strife." Well, he nailed that shoe on pretty quick. He never missed his aim. He looked at me and said, "You know, sometimes in life you've really got to struggle if you're going to find any kind of gain." But now his shirt was salted down, soaked by the summer sun. It didn't take him long trimming, and my old horse was done. I thanked him for his story, and I paid him for his time. As I was riding away, I could hear his old anvil ring, making a perfect chime. Well, there wasn't a day that went by that I didn't think of him and his advice, and I'd usually stop and see him every week, sometimes more than twice. But now the horses, they ain't lined up no more. His anvil sits there silent, and his leggings lay empty in the floor. Yeah, sometimes I go to wondering, and it makes me feel sort of sad. But the good Lord needed a farrier, and he got the best of him when he hired my dad. God bless you all, and thank you so much, Belinda, for having me on, and give Bob a hug for me.
I will do. I will do, and thank you for being on the show. Oh, my gosh. How, Kent, what can you say? Gosh, when I think of Kent and his sweet wife, Shannon, there are a lot of words that come to mind, along with the words gifted and talented and delightfully witty and funny, the words authentic and grounded and humble and inspirational come to mind. To me, Kent and Shannon are the epitome of humility. They are immensely grateful for the gifts and opportunities that the Lord has provided and are careful to redirect all the well-deserved praise back to Him. Kent is one of the fortunate people that has truly found their calling and is going after it with every fiber of his being. And as I thought about all of that, this scripture came to mind in 2 Thessalonians 1:11-12. "To this end, we always pray for you that our God may make you worthy of his calling and may fulfill every resolve for your good and every work of faith by his power, so that by the name of our Lord Jesus may be glorified in you and you in him, according to the grace of our God and the Lord Jesus Christ." You know, there are those whose gifts and callings on their lives are very public, out there for everybody to see and admire, and others have gifts and callings on their lives that are perceived as less glamorous and may not be readily seen by others, much less acknowledged or admired. But the bottom line is that the Lord's word promises us that each and every one of us does indeed have a calling, and with it special gifts, talents, and insights that are unique to us, endowed by the Lord to equip us for that calling that he's placed on our life. That calling may not be in the spotlight for all the world to see, but make no mistake, God sees it all. And I believe that his heart is filled to overflowing as he watches you carefully, quietly, and diligently steward those gifts and use them to not only uplift the people around you, but to glorify him. I love the promise of the scripture in Matthew. I think it's in the 6th chapter. "But when you give to the needy, do not let your hand know what your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and then your Father who sees what you've done in secret will reward you openly." And then in Matthew 10, "If anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones who's my disciple, truly I tell you, that person will certainly not lose their reward." So no matter how tiny the gesture is, isn't it wonderful to know that no good thing that you do goes unnoticed? The Lord himself will reward your faithfulness in exercising your gifts to fulfill his calling on your life and glorify him. How fabulous is that? So I would encourage you that no matter what others think or notice, the Lord knows and watches and sees all. In his perfect timing, he will let you know just how wonderful he thinks you are, and bless you beyond your wildest dreams. Well, that is our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us, and thank you for giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again for our very special guest, Kent Rollins, for sharing a wonderful bit of himself with us today. And of course, a huge thank you to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. Please remember that all of the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. And if you like our shows, please like us on Facebook and let your friends know about us. So until next week, blessed trails.
As the sun slowly rises, a horse softly blows and nudges wake his master as it's time for them to go. The cowboy slowly rises and saddles up to ride. Another day of drifting, no destination in his mind. When his memory starts a-turning to that cold December night, when he sat inside the cabin with tears in his eyes, he gently stroked her hand and softly she did sigh, and she spoke these words so sweetly before she closed her eyes. I could offer you the sun and moon and the twinkling stars at night, the river winding through the trees and the wild goose in its flight, an echo of the mountain peaks, the lonely howling wind. But these things are not mine to give, and time will take its toll. But remember, I will love you till the sagebrush doesn't roll. He recalls those words so fondly as he rides along some more. He spoke those same words to her one night behind closed doors. The day that they were married, he recalls to be exact, when he had not much to give her but the clothes upon his back. But that was many years ago, and the cowboy shakes his head. Now he looks to Mother Nature to comfort him instead. But sometimes when he's bedded down beneath an old oak tree, the morning wind will come and speak to him in his sleep. I could offer you the sun and moon and the twinkling stars at night, the river winding through the trees and the wild goose in its flight, an echo of the mountain peaks, the lonely howling wind. But these things are not mine to give, and time will take its toll. But remember, I will love you till the sagebrush doesn't roll. Please remember, I will love you till the sagebrush doesn't roll.